international break, but we plough on. Welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. I'm your host, Connor Southall, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined by a full roster of my colleagues, none of whom have withdrawn through injury or illness. So we're maybe in a stronger place than Norwich City at the moment in terms of options from the start. Paddy Davitt, Samuel Seaman and Adam Harvey join me. And we've got quite a bit to chat about, even though there's no football to discuss this weekend, which maybe is a nice place to start and give you a little bit of a peek behind the curtain. Lads, it's going to be a footballless weekend. How are you going to spend? I mean, some of us are working, to be fair, on individual days, but I think we've all got at least a day. So, Paddy, first and foremost, how are you going to spend your free weekend? Where, I don't know about you, but most Saturdays where Norwich aren't playing, I'm basically sat around going, I really think I should be somewhere, which is odd.
Yeah, no, it is a very disorientating feeling. I'm sure it's the same for football fans, isn't it? Saturday is football, isn't it? So, no, I've got my five-month-old is getting christened. I'm aware of that, obviously. I've said that as if she's informed me she's getting christened. But obviously, and that's back in Coventry, where the family are from. So,
Mark Robbins coming?
No. He's got more important matters, like winning a game or two to focus on. But effectively, it's going to be quite full on. We're heading back. We're recording this Thursday, Friday, it's christening Sunday, and then back to Norwich Sunday night. So there won't be a lot of R&R. There'll be a lot of balling, mainly from me, because she's teething at the minute. But so that'll be nice with the family. And just wait till the bills come in, like the bar bill and what have you, and then I have to foot that. So I won't be too happy then. But all in all, full-on family affair for me this weekend, Connor.
From balling to balling. I think that works.
B-A-L-L.
Yes, correct. I think that works. What, have you got a christening cake? Is that a thing?
Of course we have, mate.
Flavour?
Well, I think it's fairly... I can't appoint to be an expert on anything, let alone christening, but I think it has to be sponges regulation with a bit of icing.
It's not like a wedding cake where you have like a little figure on the top, is it?
No, I don't think so. I think there might be some iced wording on the front. Happy christening, and they nearly said Merry Christmas then. Happy christening, Molly. As you can see, I've been full hands-on role with this. Yeah, I basically get told this is happening, that's happening, and then I just make sure I'm there on the day to stop her from diving in the font. So there'll be cake. Yeah, I'll send you a picture, Connor. You won't be getting any of the cake because I'm a bit concerned that we need to taper down a bit on our consumption when it comes to cakes, but. Yeah, cake and then all the usual elements.
Cheese and pineapples.
The bar's the main one. Adam will know this. The bar's the main one I'm worried about. As long as the bar's open, that's, I don't know. We had a choice of menus. Nobody is remotly interested in any of this. So I don't... To underline my last point, I've got no idea which were the five menu choices we went for. So if you ask
five?
Me... Yeah, there was five. Yeah. Well, it's Coventry, isn't it? It's... High-end former city of culture, exactly. So that's my weekend. And whether I'll get to see any football, probably not. Because obviously there'll be one or two internationals dotted here, there and everywhere, won't they? But and we'll get into, obviously, the ones who have gone away and maybe aren't going to feature. But, so hopefully when we plug back in on Monday, we can really hit the ground running and build it to the Pelatch Derby this time next week.
Indeed. Any advance on a christening, Sam?
Definitely not.
Not being baptised or anything like that?
I don't think so, unless something changes in the next couple of days, big time.
If you're having an awakening.
But, I've got a couple of tennis matches. My brother's coming. So, a couple of things planned. But I thought I had made the most of the international break until Paddy revealed his plans. And now I feel like I've got quite a relaxed, boring weekend ahead. But, I'm a bit the same as you, as it gets to... a Saturday, and it's kind of it's weird not to be at a Norwich game, and it's also quite annoying if you go into town or whatever, and you realise how many people are about on Saturday. You're like, oh, okay, I'm quite glad I end up working most Saturdays in the end, but not too many exciting plans, but a couple of things going on.
What are you playing? What's the surface? Grass? This is particularly pertinent given we did the Alfie Hewitt podcast. Yeah, you should have told him about this. He might have given you some tips.
I didn't want to come off as thinking I had any sort of expertise. He probably could have given me quite a lot of tips. No, it's both on hard courts, which is where like most matches end up being played because nobody wants to pay to maintain a grass court if I'm going to be playing on it. So, just hard courts. What about you? What you got going on?
I'm going to take my dog for a walk. But like, you know, sometimes you have a bit more time, so you can take them for a better walk rather than just around the street. So I might end up in sort of Sheringham, take him that way. He's partial to a beach, so that's maybe nice. My plan. As exciting as it gets.
Norfolk dream, that.
Norfolk dream, yeah. And yeah, otherwise probably, yeah, similarly, not a christening, but similarly to Paddy, chaperoning a little person. So yeah, Adam. What exciting! I mean, you've got a whole week to be fair. So come on then, where you go? Where you going? Come on, fill us in. Yeah, because you're missing Stoke, aren't you?
Yeah, so I'm suitcase packing on Saturday, and then flying to Mallorca on Sunday morning. Land, then head to a good friend of mine's got accommodation out there, so saved me a few pennies, which is nice given my expenditure of late on house project. So I actually land just in time to watch England versus Finland, so I'm gonna find a bar and watch that. So absolutely delighted to watch Pookie in, you know, nicer weather than we've got currently outside in the UK. So yeah, that'll be good. And then yeah, follow the Norwich game from a slightly warmer climate than Stoke.
Just tilt the mic, how hot is it gonna be?
Well, I looked yesterday night and it's between about 26, 27, 28 roughly next week, which is that's a nice temperature. That's a temperature that I enjoy. Like, it's warm, but you're not like feeling like, you know, clammy and don't want to do anything all day, because it's if anything above that is just not tolerable unless there's aircon.
That tan's gonna look great at Deepdale, mate. They're not gonna need to turn the floodlights on. You'll just walk in and it'll be light everywhere. So that'll be good. Enjoy that. I'm sure you will. Don't think of us at all. Don't worry about us. I didn't even know England were playing Finland, so that shows you my knowledge of this international break. Let's talk about some football then, rather than this nonsense. I guess the place to start from a Norwich City perspective and linked internationals, Paddy, is injuries, unfortunately, which seems to be where we end up in the majority of these international breaks. At time of recording, because it can change and it can tweak, there are three Norwich City players who have withdrawn from action. Angus Gunn, who I think we suspected after he only played half of that win over Hull last week. Marcelino Nunez, who we definitely probably didn't expect, with a hamstring concern. And then Jose Cordobo has been ruled out of both Panama's friendlies against the USA and Canada, but did travel to go and get an assessment. So, not great, is it?
No, because all three, particularly off the back of the most recent game, Hull, more so I'm thinking Nunez, but all three... Gunny obviously goes without saying, but certainly the other two have emerged really under Torup as being quite key, certainly to this upturn. And obviously at this stage we await, you know, probably our next touch point with Johannes, which won't be until Friday, assuming that the press conference day is unchanged. It'll be so over a week, by which time hopefully there isn't any more added to that list from Norwich's international contingent. But so we can't really talk with any clarity in terms of lengths of layoff. The initial signs with Nunez, not great. I think that's definitely going to overhang, you know, returning to the domestic action. And Stoke, how long? As I say, Johannes will put us in the picture. That's a blow, no doubt, because I thought against Hull he was pivotal to everything they tried to do, and has been, and has grown, almost accepted that responsibility now for me in these last few games. So Cordoba and Gunny to lesser extent, probably it feels like, you know, maybe certainly with Gunny, it feels maybe these international Nations League games for Scotland have just come a little bit too soon, and, you know, to give him another week or so, you'd hope that wouldn't be anything untoward. And Cordoba, from what we're led to believe, you know, that there is a slight issue there behind the back of the knee, sort of post Leeds, but he was able to turn out and play 90 minutes against Hull. And then Johannes said he started to feel it towards the end again, because they had to make the keeper change at the break. That limited their room for manoeuvre, because I'm sure they'd have wanted to get him off rather than make him play the full 90, particularly with the way that game went and they were winning quite comfortably by the end. Wasn't to be. Rather surprising that he's gone away and linked up with Panama, given it was two friendlies. And my understanding, unless it's changed, is that the countries could only really insist on them joining up. It was a competitive game, so forgive me if that has changed. But the fact that he's gone, clearly he went with Norwich's blessing, but they've made it quite clear, and that's now been underscored by the fact he's not going to be involved in these two games for his country. that he was only really able to do a certain, I mean, you said there's been some pictures of him. He was there sort of in the warm-ups on day one, but subsequently seemed to be sitting out sessions. So that feels like a bit of a management situation. So you would hope, but as I say, we're in a little bit hypothetical territory, but you would hope that maybe Gunn and Cordoba, Stoke onwards, are okay. Nunes, sadly, would feel like they're going to have to deal without him. And if that is the case, then you're immediately thinking Forsen, you're immediately thinking Schwartau. So, you know, it's not the worst situation in terms of who could come in, but there's no doubt losing this version of Marcelinho Nunes, how important it is in terms of, well, his set-piece work, his range of passing, but also his energy. I mean, he was still bombing on, underlined by the third goal on Saturday last, where it was his break to link with Science, then feed Sargent, and then eventually Cade Gordon. So, you know, that is absolutely no doubt in my mind, him out of the side for potentially a small game sample between maybe this international period and the next one in November is a blow.
It is, and Gunn, by all accounts, I think, was initially spoken about as a rib area. I think Sky Sports said he had a broken rib. He definitely doesn't have a broken rib. I think it's a little bit more muscular. I'm not even sure it's his ribs at all. But, yeah, like you say, hopefully he's going to be in a position where he can be back, albeit George Long, I thought, did well when he came on, made a couple of good saves. But generally, in this Norwich team, goalkeepers are a lot more protected, I think, than perhaps they were last year. But Sam, just to pick it up off the back of that, I think for Nunez, and I think it's hard, he obviously did it during the whole game. I mean, unless you boys shout differently, I can't remember any moment where I saw him limping or struggling, but maybe it's one of these that has sort of, you know, seized up and then got worse, and or adrenaline's carried him through the game, which can happen. It would be a big blow for Norwich, but I think more so for him, because you think about his opening 2 years at Norwich, where there's been bursts. We had we had a Panenka penalty, we had that goal against Birmingham, we've had some brilliant free kicks, Ipswich, and some brilliant passes and individual performances. But in terms of putting a run together, I actually think 2024 has been probably his strongest period in a Norwich shirt since January onwards, where he did manage to break into that midfield, and obviously Gabriel Sara got pushed into a more advanced position to almost accommodate that. But by and large, it's been pretty inconsistent and pretty infrequent for him since his move across, and understandable given the size of that move. But I think if he was now to be out for any real length of time, it would be a major blow for, yes, Norwich, but also for him at the point where it just feels like, you know, you look at him and it's like he's beginning to get a little bit of consistency, form, and really establish himself under Johannes Hovtorup.
Yeah, I think the timing is terrible for him, to be honest, because he had taken that step up, you felt, from a sort of run-of-the-mill player who was probably going to start every week and look like a tidy player, to actually the last couple of weeks someone who you thought, this is somebody who really will contribute to Norwich's success and is a real difference maker to this team. You saw, you know, against Hull, some of the passes that he made, some of the contributions that he made to that team. And there are certain elements of his game that you don't feel anyone else can offer. So I suppose in terms of his future prospects and retaining that place in the starting 11, to be honest, I'm very open to having my mind changed, and I'm sure Johannes Hovtorup is as well. But I don't see anyone coming in and playing well enough to displace him permanently. But equally, we know how much football is about confidence and momentum, especially for someone who has had some growing pains in a Norwich shirt and has worked with a few different Norwich head coaches now, has had to adapt to a few different styles. Now looks like he's finally in his flow, and then gets this injury, which doesn't look overly serious, but obviously he will miss a run of games and he will lose a bit of match sharpness as well. So yeah, for him, I think the timing is really, really poor. For Norwich, they've lost a few things from that team that I'm not sure anyone can replace. But I suppose to put a positive spin on it, the fact that they've got someone like that, they've got players who are stepping up into those roles is encouraging, because over the last couple of seasons you would have said losing Nunez through injury is, you know, a bit of a blow and a fairly consistent player lost. But now the fact that it feels like this level of a problem for Norwich probably tells you everything you need to know about how much he's improved.
Yeah, it does. And I think what you know, we've spoken a lot about the structural changes and inverted fullbacks and that type of thing, but what that change has allowed Norwich to do is really free up Nunez. You've seen less of him probably taking the ball from the back four and more of him in advanced areas. I mean, I looked at the sort of average position map after the game against Hull, and actually he was the closest player to Josh Sargent, the closest midfielder. So he's almost in like a number 10 role is where they've crafted it out for him. And and that ability then to use that technicality and that passing range in better areas. I mean, he was obviously scored the first goal, played a key role in the second, I think, from memory. So they've got him in higher areas. But I think Adam probably having Slimani back and having him fit probably changes a little bit of that dynamic. Because I think if this would have been a few weeks ago and we were maybe talking about a player coming into a more, like Forsen, for example, coming into a deeper position, I think there's them wonder, you sort of then wonder about how the structure of the team changes to accommodate that. Whereas now it does feel like you could maybe drop a Forsen in there or maybe even a short hour. I thought went significantly under the radar given everything that happened on Saturday, but I thought he looked very, very good when he came on actually in his cameo. So who do you feel is best placed to replace him? I guess we're probably talking about those two, unless you want to throw in anyone else. I guess Gabe Forsyth could play in there. Feels a bit too early for Emi Marcondes probably.
Yeah, I think obviously it is a huge boost to have Slimani available, particularly given the amount of away games they've got coming up. I felt, you know, certainly at Swansea, they probably lacked that physicality in midfield. So probably not the biggest blow to therefore lose Nunez, given the amount of away games. So I think you can almost replace him with someone like for like. I mean, Svartau, I think, has had some pretty positive moments and clearly a creative flair player that I think has got a lot to build on. Obviously, still a very young man, new to the country and the city and all these various things we talk about around players from abroad that, you know, arrive in England. But I think they've got options, and that's positive. It's almost, you know, you don't want any injuries to any certain positions, but it feels like a position they probably could bring a Forsen in who's got still things to prove. I mean, if he's had some positive performances, you know, you look at Sheffield United, he had some good, some bad, and very good against Stevenage, albeit against lower opposition, and then really struggled in at games like Swansea, where, you know, I think it just wasn't his day, and every, you know, misplaced pass felt like it was, you know, going to be another one coming straight after. It's just about trying to build his confidence, and maybe he will benefit from having a little bit of a run of games and that sort of, you know, knowing that, you know, he's going to be in the starting 11 week in, week out for a little period to try and prove his worth, you know, to then give Nunez even more competition when he gets back, and competition is good in any squad. So I think, given the options they have, obviously Emi Marcondes could probably go and drop in that sort of number 10 role as well. So I think they've got loads of options, which is therefore makes that position maybe less of a concern to me than if they'd have lost a Sainz or a Sargent, where maybe you look sort of at the other options and thinking, okay, they're a bit light in that area. Midfield feels like probably their strongest area.
Yeah, and as Adam says, Paddy, I think if you're looking at anyone within that team, Nunez is a blow. Gunn would be a blow, clearly, if he was out for any period of time because of the quality that he has. Cordoba, we've seen how sort of his introduction to the team has coincided with an uplift in form. I don't think those two things are unrelated because of what he enables them to do with the back four and probably squeeze the game a little bit more. But Josh Sargent's the big one, isn't he? He's gone away with the US. They're playing, I think, two friendlies. They are playing Panama, yeah. I don't know who they're playing game two, though, off the top of my head. So we'll have to have a look at that, but he's got an opportunity as well. There's a few injuries in the American forward lines. Obviously, Maurizio Pochettino now their coach. It's an opportunity for him to really stake a claim after what's been probably a frustrating period for him in domestically and internationally, but probably more so internationally, given he's had to pull out of squads. But I mean, Norwich fans, you're more than welcome to come and watch those games from behind this sofa if you like, because I think that's how it's going to be spent, isn't it? Watching him as it always is in international periods, because probably what we're speaking there may be different options in terms of Nunez, but striking options there's not really.
No, and because of the injuries in that area of the pitch, not out and out striking options, Barnes aside, but, you know, Hernandez, Fasnacht, one or two others, is why they went and did Marcondes. So straight away, you're starting from a point of, we're probably not that well covered in terms of attacking. And then if you drill into that a little bit further, into like-for-like number nines, there isn't another one in the squad, not a senior one. I mean, we saw at Palace in the League Cup, you know, when they didn't go with Sargent, it was Cernach who was tried down there. And to burden him, really, I think, at this stage of his career, when he's just trying to establish himself on the right-hand side of that attacking three, he's got enough on his plate as it is. And I thought we're starting to see signs of him in his link-up play. He was involved in that lovely flowing team goal the other day. It certainly wouldn't be the optimum scenario to then have to force him to play down the middle and take on board the responsibility that comes with that. You know, the link-up play with Science, the general link-up play, because Sargent was very good again, I thought, in general play. I mean, it was his lovely pivot. If you go right back to the start of that game on Saturday and then release for early Science chance, you know, his awareness of others. And all of that is before you actually get into in the box and his effectiveness. What is it now? Is it 7 goal contributions in 9? Yeah. Off the back of last season's numbers, he was, I've said it on a few platforms recently, he was the difference. That's why they got in the top six. You know, either side of his 4 months out with ankle-related issues, it's his goals that propelled that vintage under David Wagner in. So there's no doubt he is the most important element in this group of Norwich players. And you found some quotes he's done in the last sort of 24 hours with the US media, talking about the ankle issues and going back to Qatar, actually, and the World Cup. That's when it first started. And it's not always been maybe the same ankle, but that part of his body now getting on for 2 years now, has been a problem. It's had to be managed. I remember David Wagner, clearly he's not really kicking a ball in training week to week. We're just almost managing his body to get him to the start line. He said that. He's repeated that in this latest round of interviews he's done. I would hope that that's referring to that period rather than in the here and now. He's still effectively being wrapped in cotton wool. I get the sense that isn't the case, but there's no doubt, because we've already had it this season. Was there a game or two where there was
ankle irritation? But I think that was the other ankle, wasn't it? But in these quotes, he is saying that he feels his ankle is in probably the best place that it's been for a significant period. So that is good news.
That is good news. But by the same token, maybe now a little bit with Cordoba, if there's an issue there that isn't necessarily precluding them from playing games for Norwich, but there is an issue nevertheless. The fear, I'm sure, at the back of the people who matter is always, could it break down again? Could he have problems? Could they reoccur? And if that was the case, and it's a very, very dark scenario we're painting here now, but we've just spent the last segment about Nunes and if he's out for a block of games, the impact. And I think we're probably of the same opinion that you can mitigate that with maybe the other options. So pull that out, bring in the Sergeant scenario and say the same thing. You're out without him for a period of games. You would fear for the upward curve that this team is on now in terms of performances and results, because he is so important. And you don't just measure his impact in goals or even assists. It's his all-round play, how he leads that line. And Johannes has referenced that as well. He is so crucial to what that guy is trying to build with this group of players and the footballing outlook. So what we don't need now over the intervening day, if we do, I'm blaming you, Connor, for talking this up, is Josh Sargent hobbles off in one of the US's two friendlies and scans revealed ... So we certainly don't need that. But it has to be a concern moving forward, even if we'd have no reoccurrences in the next few days, that you just feel your one bad challenge, your one kind of, overstretch or something away from being plunged into what would be, let's be honest, the nightmare scenario.
Yeah, indeed, and that hasn't happened yet, and let's hope it doesn't. But that is the nature, I think, for every team in the Championship, isn't it? One injury, two injury to certain players, and it can derail you, as I think we saw last season in that dreadful spell where Norwich dropped to, 17th, where they had all those injuries. Gunn was out, Sargent was out. There was a list as long as your arm in terms of injuries at that stage, and they did really struggle, and it can really impact you. So let's hope that's not the case and he returns to Norfolk unscathed. But it's going to be really interesting for him this break, because it's a real opportunity to impress Pochettino whilst I think there's a couple of other options who haven't travelled in terms of American strikers. So there's obviously a home World Cup on the horizon. I'm sure he's beginning to turn his attentions to that a little bit. So it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on. And yes, that is the main thing, that he comes back healthy and ready to impact the game at Stoke, albeit he's, I think, going to come back pretty late, isn't he? Because I think he is the last international to play, isn't he?
He's playing Wednesday morning, I think, in that second, like 2 a.m, something like, or maybe midnight. But yeah, he's one of... Well, yeah, now Nunez isn't in there. I think you're right. He's the last one.
Yeah, that's not ideal, is it? To come back from the States and then go to Stoke. What a contrast! What a contrast that is. Before we do that, before we move on to next thing, wanted to highlight Vicente Reyes, who has been called up for the first time into the senior squad at Chile, which I think is a magnificent achievement. Again, similar, they've got, I think, a couple of goalkeeping injuries, and he's subsequently been called up along with Lawrence Vigoro, who we saw at Swansea a couple of weeks ago. So be interesting to see whether he gets any minutes. He's obviously been on loan at Cambridge, who have had a pretty torrid start to the season. I think they're maybe the only team in the EFL who haven't won a game yet, possibly, but really struggling. So, hopefully he can have a good experience there, but that's good at 20 years old to get called up to the senior squad of Chile. He must be doing something right. From South America to Spain, Sam, Championship Player of the Month, Borja Sainz. I mean, never in doubt, was it? Did they even really need a judging panel for that?
Yeah, I mean, you saw that shortlist come through, and it wasn't ever really...
Go on, tell us a shortlist. Who was on it? Testing your memory.
You are. I've only got one name in my head, and I'm sure you could guess it was. But Danny Bart made it made it to the list, which, you know, fair play to him, having struggled for game time at Norwich to then go and play that well for Blackburn already. But I must confess,
Barry Bannon, who was the other
Mowat,
yeah,
there you go. It's not a bad list in terms of championship experience and sort of stalwarts of.
It's the David Wilkins team, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. I'm sure he would have been quite happy with that. Sorry, that transfer window, to be honest. But no, I think once you saw that list come through, there was only really going to be one person who won that award, that trophy. And even before that shortlist came through, you would have been looking at him with the stats that he's produced in September, the performances that there's been from him. And it's easy to forget that a few weeks ago we were talking about, after Swansea, the fact that he needed to add goals and assists to his game, that he needed to maybe improve that output in the final third. Now he's somebody who all of a sudden seems to be almost defined by those goal contributions and being in the right place at the right time in those big moments in games. And to be fair, we spoke a lot in the summer about new heroes being needed, about after Gabriel Sarr and Jonathan Rowe left, goals and assists being needed. I think everyone was looking at Borja Sainz as somebody who could step up and take on that role. And to be honest, so far he's done it even better than I think any of us could have predicted. So yeah, really, really encouraging from him. I don't think it was ever in doubt that he would be winning this Player of the Month award. And just like I was saying with Nunez, and as we've seen with a couple of other players in the team, it feels like those players who we saw with potential, and there was a lot of talks about what if and whether they could go on and produce that, mostly under Johannes Ovtorup, and it's credit to him and his coaching staff as well. Those players seem to be achieving the potential that we've seen from them last season in a yellow and green shirt. And Sainz right now is right at the top of that pile, not only at Norwich, but probably also in the Championship. So, it looks like a huge talent Norwich have on their hands now. As we often say, the task is consistency. And seeing him reproduce this for the whole of the season, I mean, that would be unbelievable. That would be getting towards sort of Mitrovic level numbers. But if he can get somewhere near this on a consistent basis for Norwich, then they should be in and around that sort of playoff race at least, because you have a talent like that at the top end of the pitch, along with Josh Sargent, who obviously we've already talked about, and a defence that's looking better and better with every game. Norwich should be in a real, real good position. And it feels like Sainz is at the heart of that.
My challenge for Borja Sainz, it's mine and mine alone, is can he get to a double-double, you know, double in goals, double figures in assists? That's you think he can? It's more the assists I'm wondering about.
Yeah, that's the challenge.
So I think if he can do that, that is then basically all you need to prove as a Championship player, that you're then ready to take the step. Did Sarr do it last season? I think he did, didn't he?
Yes.
Buendia did it. So again, I think if you can get to those levels, that's when
Madison did it.
That's when you then get to talk to levels about, you know, serious money moves. I think he's been linked with Bilbao again overnight, which I think is someone from that part of the world he's going to pretty consistently, I'm afraid, particularly with lots of chat around Nico Williams. But in terms of sliding doors moments, and I was thinking about this as you were speaking, Sam, I wonder how big that moment at Derby could become, that when the ball was clearly out of play, it should have been given a goal kick, but that really has sort of sparked this surge in form that we've seen. So you just wonder how big that might pan out being, unfortunately, for Derby fans. But Sam's right, isn't he, Adam, in terms of that consistency point? That's the next point for Borja Sainz, because we've seen bursts like this before, where I think we had a period around the turn of the year last season where he seemed to score that goal every week, or do a 1-2 and then curl it in the top corner with the right foot. This does feel a little bit more sustainable because of the type of team that Norwich are, and there were some really good statistics put out there. I'll try and find who it was for part two, but it basically that showed Norwich were creating basically the best value of shots in the division in terms of expected goals, which basically means they're effectively producing the best chances in the Championship. So that feels a lot more sustainable in that point. So now it's up to him to go and prove that he can become a player who can, as we spoke about, get double figures in the columns that matter.
Yeah, I felt, you know, maybe coming to this summer there'd be more pressure on his shoulders to try and produce goals and assists. You know, you take Sarr out of the team, you take Johnny Rowe out of the team. I know he obviously had a spell of injury, but still scored quite a chunk of goals at the start of the campaign. And you looked at that and you thought, okay, who's in this team that can step up to that next level? And I felt Sines was one of those that could do it. Obviously, we saw flashes of it last season, but just not consistently enough. And even at the start of this season, you know, a couple of weeks back now, we were talking about that, you know, level of consistency. You know, obviously, a couple of goals in the home games in August, but then, you know, you go to Swansea and he spurns two or three really good opportunities at the end of the game. And you could sort of see that emotion in his game that he just needs to control. And it feels like throughout September that he sort of eradicated that. And you mentioned the goal against Derby. That was almost a springboard then for the two that he scored in that game. And he just feels like a player full of confidence, even that, you know, going back to the whole game, misses that opportunity early doors. And I think, you know, maybe a month back, that would have been a moment where he looked at that and has struggled to have almost when that next opportunity came to try and take it. But almost, you know, carbon copy opportunity in the second half, confidence within him, puts it right, puts it in the back of the net. And I think that's only positive for Norwich. And obviously, again, it's a fitness thing. Keep him fit because, you know, if he's going to keep this consistency, he needs to keep himself fit, because I think there's so many players that have these really positive bursts. I mean, Johnny Rowe is a, you know, prime example. Don't want to go into him too much because, you know, I know he's maybe not the most liked figure. But you look at the start of last season, you know, that sort of right up to December, you know, he was a hero, scoring every week. And then the injury came back and just didn't look quite the same play. You know, that sharpness that you mentioned, even with Nunez, is now going to have to try and regain. Is playing week in, week out in the Championship is a gruel, but it keeps you sharp. And, you know, I think he could be one of the leading lights in the division in terms of top goal contributions this season, particularly playing with Sargent, who, again, it's crucial to keep him fit. But those two feel like a partnership that's really starting to blossom. And we've seen, you know, Norwich Championship successes, and they typically have a partnership of an attacking creative player and a striker. And I could name two or three of those. And feels like Pookie Buendia obviously is the obvious one. Holt Houlihan, even going further back, maybe not successes, but, you know, Dion and Hux, those kind of individual duos that score you goals that, you know, is a springboard for success.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be, you know, you think for him, he's going to be absolutely desperate for football to come back first and foremost, but then to carry this on, I think, as well, because it does feel like, as you mapped out there, the time for him now, he's had a year in England, he's had a year to bed in, he's playing a style of play that creates opportunities now for him to go and prove that he can, as he has done so far this season. So we shall watch with interest, of course. And that SAS partnership is quite something. Right, part two coming your way very shortly. We're going to be talking about Norwich more generally over the opening nine games, whether we need to review any pre-season predictions or not. And we'll also be teasing a little chat that Paddy's done this morning with somebody very interesting. So we'll reveal all very shortly. This is part two of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast during your October international break. 1.5 to go till Christmas, so there we go. How are you boys doing? Hamstrings all okay? No knocks or anything in the first part? No? Excellent. No one withdrawing as of yet? Great. Let's start with, very firstly, coaches. Let's start with where we're at with that, Paddy. Norwich still, as they go to Stoke, ironically, still in the process, and I think as this go out, we'll still be in the process of hiring a new coach to help Johannes Hovtorup and to join his team. Do they really need one? They've done quite well without it in the last few weeks, but just walk us through where we're at in terms of that process at this moment in time.
Well, as I say, these things can be overtaken by, but as we sit here this afternoon, which is Thursday afternoon, yeah, I think there were some meetings on Wednesday, as it was told to us earlier today, that almost today will be when Ben Napper and Johannes decide of the two candidates, which Johannes had mapped out earlier in the week. We had that line. They'll go with their decision, and then hopefully over the weekend, as we move through the weekend, the sort of contractual elements, both are in work, so there's obviously compensation to agree with club to club. And then, you know, you wouldn't have thought the personal elements would be an issue if these two have actually interviewed or been sounded out about the post. And then if subject to all of that being fairly smooth, then maybe early next week, which sort of chimes with what Johannes said off the back of, and prior to be fair, the whole game, which by the time we get round to Stoke, that person is in the building. But you're right. I mean, you know, and Johannes has been quick to highlight the work of Declan Rudd and Joe Schulberg, the two who stepped up from the academy, that the results have certainly not impacted. If anything, they've got even better. Sorry, Narcis, but and Paul. And but yeah, I think it's that has afforded them the space and the time to not rush it. You know, there was obviously the very public pursuit of the gentleman from Randers back in Denmark who didn't do himself any favours with
Giannis. Did he get a Christmas card this year, do you?
He'll be firmly deleted from his phone now, I think. he wanted that known that Norwich had been in for him, and it almost inferred, or at least that was the impression put out there through various actors on X, that he'd turn Norwich down, which very much wasn't the case. I don't think those two will definitely. I don't think he'll be coming to Norwich anytime soon. Put it that way. Not in terms of being part of Johannes's backroom team, but so you know, we'll await that. I think there was a report in Denmark, wasn't there, back end of the week that the two person shortlist, neither of those are Danes in that regard. I think we got a sense earlier today that it might be more a little bit like the Nick Stanley appointment previously, who obviously came in once Andy Hughes departed, that it was very much Ben Napper leading that. Maybe Ben Napper who had the connections that led to Nick Stanley coming in as set piece slash first team coach. It feels that this search will again be stamped with Ben Napper, with obviously Giannis's full buy-in. So maybe that suggests it might be more a domestic-based appointment, as it has been with Nick Stanley and Tony Roberts, to be fair. So, So, hopefully, if that will go smoothly, then by the time we head to Stoke, that person will be in the building. And you just hope, as it seems to have worked very well so far with the backroom team, that blend is conducive to continuing where they've left off.
Yeah, I always think it's an interesting dynamic because I guess like a player, you've got a coach coming in who then has to learn a new game model theoretically and then has to try and implement that. So I guess, you mentioned the academy guys, they're still in the next few weeks going to be so important to that sort of transitional process as Norwich go through that. So we'll obviously wait to see who that person will be, but they'll clearly play a huge part in terms of shaping this new Norwich City era under Giannis Hovtorup and Glenn Riddlesholm and Nick Stanley and Tony Roberts and all the other guys, the players. And except we could go on to listen to Kit Man if I continue, so we'll carry it as good as Pete is. Let's reopen what we spoke about in the summer then, in terms of, I think we all went with relatively, I think you might have gone the highest, Sam, actually, in terms of mid-table predictions. Look, we're 9 games in, it's very early, but maybe that's the question, actually. Did you expect Norwich City to be here after 9 games in the position they are, where people are genuinely beginning to get a little bit excited about what could be possible?
Absolutely not. I think you could tell from my prediction, and probably to a greater extent, the rest of yours, that the expectation around it was a transitional season, and I was fully committed to that prediction. It wasn't even half and half or one that I felt was a risk. It really did feel to me extremely likely that Norwich would be somewhere in the middle of the Championship with no threat of relegation, and if they were to compete for the playoffs or promotion, then it would be one that didn't live too long and maybe didn't come that close to threatening. But so far, I think you can tell from the conversation that's being had between Norwich fans, and also even beyond that sort of yellow and green bubble to national coverage, when that conversation starts to turn to, are Norwich better than everyone thought they might be, then it shows how good the performances have been. I'm still reluctant to completely commit to saying that I think they're going to now, be a big part of the promotion race, or that they'll definitely get in the playoffs or anything like that. But Johannes Hovtorup was optimistic in pre-season and in those meetings with fans and press briefings. In the summer, he said there will be loads of teams in the Championship that feel they have a chance of promotion, and he was absolutely sure that Norwich would be one of those. After the first few games of the season, after Oxford especially, you felt that was maybe posturing on his side, and that everyone was getting a bit of a reality check as to what this season might feel like at times. But right now you're seeing the flip side of it, and you're seeing what I think everyone expected to see maybe in the last few games of the season, or even next season if Norwich were going to kick on and try and compete for promotion at that time. But yeah, right now you'd say that if you'd plotted a curve for where they might be, they are so far ahead of that. And of course there's always room for things to dip. There's things that could be out of their control, like the injuries that we've talked about today. We don't know for some of them what the extent of those will be, whether they'll cause them further problems, and what the impact on the team as a whole will be. So there are still plenty of factors that could change and that could disrupt Norwich's season. But if you could distill that whole performance and take it every week to every ground in the Championship and at Carrow Road, then you'd say this is a team that will absolutely be competing for those top two places, let alone the top six. So I'll leave it for a few more weeks to actually judge where I think it will finish. But right now, they're definitely on course to make us look quite silly.
Good. I hope they do because in the car back from the Kassam, I was sat there going, "Oh no! I think I've almost gone too high in terms of prediction." But I think in many ways, Adam, that sort of encapsulates just how impressive it's been. And again, I don't think this is a carried away point. So we're taking a snapshot of where things are right now post Hull. Obviously, as we mapped out on, I think, last week's pod, they could go and lose the next 10. But as a snapshot in time, it's really impressive. 9 games in, Oxford is game 1, Hull is game 9. To chart their progress is almost stupid, really, the amount of progress that we've seen. And I think and there's been a lot of people maybe who wanted to compare it with Daniel Farke and what he did here. And it was 2 titles. It's just not comparable at this moment in time, nor should it be, in my view. But I'm almost more willing to take the point from the first season under Farke, which was a transitional season. They finished below Ipswich in that campaign, which isn't something they've done too regularly over the last 15 years, albeit in the last year or so. But you think about how long it took here. It took him really till the turn of the year, even maybe into February, March time, where you were beginning to see signs of life maybe, and Mario Vrančić starting to play well, and some of those elements beginning to come together. He's seemingly done it after 9 games. And like I say, there's a consistency point. Norwich might not be able to produce the levels that we've seen over the last few weeks. And teams do run hot and cold in the Championship, as we saw last season, where you can be 17th and finish in 6th. So it's a long way to go. But in terms of what he has produced, even if this does turn out to be a transitional season, of what is possible, what the levels are, what the levels look like when they do it well, if they can get to those levels consistently, then I think that is probably why it is creating so much excitement.
Yeah, I'm fully on board the sort of positive train. I mean, you can sort of see the reaction at Carrow Road. It feels like something's starting to brew. You know, the fans are buying into what they're seeing, and that's only positive. And I think, you know, given the amount of turbulence that's been around this season already, you know, we've mapped out the coaches' change and, you know, the Jonathan Rowe saga, Adam Eales saga, he's had lots to deal with off the pitch. I think, you know, fast forward maybe even, you know, to sort of another 5-6 months, hopefully there's going to be a bit less of that and it's going to be a little bit more stable. And I think that's almost then an opportunity to go even further, because I mean, you know, he's managed to achieve this in what, for me, even an 8-game period, because I think I take the Oxford one out of the equation because of all the mitigation and various things that were surrounding that game, and the rapid, you know, rate of progress in that is quite remarkable. And you mentioned that Farke season. I mean, they obviously brought in a lot of players that summer, and a lot of them were, you know, domestic signings, some of them were from overseas, but they were typically a lot more sort of, or from Germany, maybe a little bit more used to Farke, and or not necessarily just Farke, but some of them were Vrančić and these like Zimmermann. I feel like this time around they've obviously brought in a lot more players from a vaster region across Europe, and I think that in itself, you know, having to sort of adapt to culture and various things and have a completely different playing style for the players that are in the building. Yeah, I think the rate of change, you know, what we're seeing now is very remarkable, and long may it continue, because I think the next patch of games is going to be difficult. You know, they've got 4 on the road of the next 5, and we've maybe seen this season that I don't think they've looked quite the same away from home as they have at home this season. You know, there's obviously factors for that. You know, going to Derby and winning in its own right was going to be a difficult test. They hadn't conceded a goal there in, you know, what, 7 or 8 games, whatever it was, and they hadn't lost since February, and Norwich are the first team to go there and get a result. They still scored 3 goals that day, but it wasn't as comfortable as like the whole game, you know, this weekend. So for me, the test is going to be this next block of games. If they can maintain that consistency, then I think they've got a real opportunity then going into that Christmas period where there's game to really build. And if they've got themselves in the picture by Christmas, then who knows, top 2 or, you know, certainly top 6 could be a possibility this season.
Yeah, indeed. And I think, as you say, this is now the really interesting period where, you know, and it sounds silly, but the weather's changed and the games are coming a bit quicker. And you know, if you're a player who's come from abroad and then Norwich have had it pretty gentle. I know they've had a few midweeks and sort of ended with a 3-game week, but there's a lot more of them to come. This is where the proper test is. And equally, I think you know, in Sam, you mentioned some of that national coverage. There will be championship clubs who are aware of that now. They'll be aware of what they want to do. So we're going to see teams now begin to try and counteract them and try to do things, I think, to limit them to a greater extent to maybe what they have done in this first portion of the season. So, again, it's another response to that and how they respond to teams coming to Carrow Road and parking a bus. Can they break that down? Can they prevent themselves from being open on the counter? These are the questions that I think are going to come over this next block of time. But just to reflect on sort of what's happened over the last nine games, Paddy, I mean, I remember where we were when Ben Krasny signed. I mean, we were in Austria, beautiful sunshine in a beautiful part of the world. But he was Norwich's third summer signing, and he came when Norwich were in Austria, which was their second, I think, of pre-season camps. It was pretty late on in pre-season, wasn't it? I think they returned and played. Who did they play? St. Pauli, and then the season began. Yeah. If I've got that right. Yeah. So that gives you an indication of just how close it was to the start of the season. Obviously, they got a couple in before that Oxford game. Forsen was in the building technically, but hadn't been in very long. Callum Doyle likewise. But he was signing number three, and it was that late. That sort of gives you an indication of just how much, I guess, they've had to contend with up to this point.
And on that point, I mean, I said 12th, but that was the week after they got back and leading into São Paulo, which was those elements, but it was also, had Sara gone by then? Sara had gone by then, hadn't he, I think? Yep.
Yes.
But you had the Rowe saga, you had the Ida saga, then it was the Kamara saga, you know, I mean, it was onward onward on an ever.
I don't think we by the time we sat down to do that prediction pod, I don't think we had the Rowe stuff or the Kamara stuff at that stage.
Well, no, because that was Oxford and that blew up, wasn't it? We're right. I think it was the Friday before the Oxford game that the Marseille initial approach came through officially. And obviously the Ida saga had basically cast that shadow over most of the summer. So all of that uncertainty off the pitch clearly had to be a distraction in terms of. Even if everything had been very smooth off the pitch, a new head coach wanting a new brand of football, a new style, putting new demands on that set of experienced players that he'd inherited, adding in his own players, and only starting to, as you say, to underline that process in terms of the timescale of when Krasny came through the door, then you had that first sample, as it were, that when it mattered at Oxford, which was, well, to paraphrase Johannes, so far removed from what he expects, what he feels is capable, what he wants to imprint on this group of players in this football club. And to go from that very, very dispiriting in many ways weekend, on the opening weekend, and I can't think what the away support was that day. Well, I'm going to say around about 1,500, it felt around about that. I bet if you could have canvassed every single one of them and said, by the time you get to the October international break, you're going to be this amount of points. You're going to be seeing your team score this amount of goals, particularly at home.
Didn't you predict they would be the top scorers in the championship? I think we might have laughed at the time, actually.
You're missing out the bit where I said it'd also be probably the worst conceded goals. But certainly goals for, yeah. Because you could just see that if it clicked, and we've seen evidence of that now in this sample that and the stats that you referenced a bit earlier in the podcast, they do testify to chance creation. They're as good as anything in the division. So, and then, of course, you've got a science in the form he's in. You've got a sergeant in the form he's in. There's other goals being shared around that team. I don't think goal scoring will be the problem. For me, just in terms of moving this forward now from here, which is a very, very healthy platform within which to now build the season upwards, you just... listen to Johannes post-match, even Saturday, post-match hall, and he's talking about specifically defensive areas. You know, again, there was that spell in the second half. You wouldn't say they got pinned back, but it's almost like they retreated back, whether it was a self-conscious, subconscious thing, and got a little bit too deep. And, of course, it didn't matter in the final analysis. They got the third, they got the fourth, they won the game easy enough, even allowing for Sargent's penalty against the foot of the post. But he was very quick to pick up on that and talked about, in weeks to come, there will be better at almost diffusing the situation by possession. He talked about slowing the tempo down, taking heat out of the game. You saw samples of that or fragments of that derby, where again they had to weather a little bit of an uncomfortable period defensively in and around Angus's box. So that's, for me now, the hugely encouraging element to this is that, taking Sam's point, you know, if they get a little bit of luck with injuries, particularly to key players through this period now where the game's come thick and fast, the growth potential in this group from where they are now, which is clearly, you look at the league table, I know it's early, but they're in that bracket of clubs who would justifiably think they'll be in the conversation for at least the top six, maybe even higher, but certainly the top six. But if they can address some of these issues that Yanis is referencing, he's fully aware of, that he now wants to try and work on, where does that take the trajectory this season? Only higher for me. So that's the real tantalising element, is that it feels playoff potential for me if they get a bit of luck with injuries and what have you. But it could be even better if, you know, he can build into those defensive elements that he keeps referencing, which you can see in these games, even though they're coming out the right side. You know, when you start, particularly when you start going away to maybe some of the teams who are in and around them at the top end of the table, where they will have to be very good defensively, it won't be a case that they can rely heavily on their scoring one more goal than the opposition. They're going to have to be better in those aspects and facets that he has clearly highlighted. But if they can get that right and retain that quite potent attacking element to their game, then, you know, to go take it right back to the start of this conversation, the Farker 18-19 season probably showcased the attacking prowess of his template. But the 2021, you know, which gets lost a little bit, it wasn't that they blew teams away. They were very hard efficient. To beat. They were very efficient, Ben Gibson and Hanley at the core of that. But you saw both sides, and that was almost a maturation, wasn't it? An evolution of a head coach who'd had time, had successive transfer windows. They'd made more right calls than wrong, and you saw that growth. The really impressive thing about this guy is that we're seeing evidence of this in a massively abbreviated timescale. But, you know, let's, as I say, like, rather than get too carried away, let's see where we are around Christmas time. You know, if we've continued on an upward curve, then I think you can start to talk in terms of maybe this season they can get themselves back to the Premier League.
Yeah, I think I'm a bit like, you know, that video of Ralph Hasenhüttl when he celebrates, yeah, and then it's just at the end, it's just, yeah, just steady, and let's just see how it unfolds. Right, let's do two very, very quick fire rounds of points predictions. I know they're all your favourite, but equally, before that, if we were to stop this season at this point, and, you know, we had the Barry Butler Memorial Trophy on this table, who would you be handing it to? I just want an answer. Don't need any sort of explanations. Sam, I'll let you go first in this round. You go last in the next round.
Is this points or
no? This is player. Okay. So if you were to give a player of the season award at this stage, who would you give it to? 9 games in.
Boa Sainz.
Adam.
I think that's the easy answer. Callum Doyle.
Callum Doyle, nice. Pad.
I was going to say both of them. Sainz, got to be Sainz, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm probably with you on Doyle, actually. Yeah, I think in terms of impact and whatnot, but it's quick fire, so I can't go into it. Point, so do you want to do a 5-game block or do you want to do a 3-game week? It's up to you. How do you want to do it? Should we do the next 3 games, return? Yeah. Okay, so that is Stoke away, Preston away, Middlesbrough at home, which is going to be tough, I think. That's a tough old week. 9 points on the table. How many did Norwich get? Paddy Davitt.
Well, I'll tip into the optimistic element and I'll say 5.
Adam?
6.
Yeah, 5.
4. I think they might slip up.
I thought 4.
I think they might slip up.
I was looking to be more positive than you,
Connor. Yeah, I think I've been quite, not negative, but I think I've been maybe more pessimistic throughout this season. So, yeah, hopefully they prove me wrong. So that's that out of the way. And, of course, you can let us know your predictions as well. If you're watching on YouTube, you can comment below or you can social us on all the social medias. We're on pretty much all of them, I think. So, you can get in touch with there, Pinken, and you'll find us on various different abbreviations of that handle. Right, Paddy, you've got a chat coming up that people, I think, are going to be very interested in. Tell us who you've been. As you said, it's Thursday recording this, so you spent the morning at Colney. Who have you been catching up with?
Well, we were cordially invited by ourselves to go to Colney and speak to Lee Dunn, who's Norwich's head of recruitment. To my mind, he's not done any external media. I think he's got a really fascinating backstory, and we get into that. You know, we had a good 40-minute sit down with him. And probably, you know, anybody who consumes that content, which we'll look to push out now, maybe the start of the second international week. But you'll definitely have, I think, a better understanding of their recruitment approach, you know, how they go about it, the minutiae of some of the recent windows, you know, how much work goes in, the processes. And this is a guy who, a little bit surprising to me, I didn't realise he's been in the building at Norwich since Chris Hughton's tenure, 2013, he said, in a variety of roles, very similar in terms of his path to becoming recruitment head now in regard that earlier in his football career he was in performance analysis. So straight away there's a connection there with Ben Napper, we spoke about that, and just some really illuminating conversations around, as we know, a very key area for Norwich, but football clubs generally, you know, getting more right than wrong, and some of the challenges that are involved as well, and some self-reflection maybe where they haven't quite got it right in Lee's opinion. So hopefully if that all goes to plan, start next week, and yet another reason to make sure you always consume your content on Norwich City from the Pinkin, particularly if you haven't already subscribed. Why not? But that's the type of content, hopefully, we consistently can produce, and the more people who subscribe, maybe the more types of that content we can do. So I think the audience will be the judge, but as I say, from a guy who's in an absolutely critical role, right at the apex of that recruitment strategy at the football club, spanning a lot of different head coaches, two sporting directors, and lots of players have come and gone on his watch, and to get that level of insight from him, and maybe one or two clues to where they might go in January as well, the upcoming window. So yeah, well worth consuming that piece of content. Yeah,
definitely is, and maybe some snippets of January stuff in there as well, which what direction they might go, or if any direction at all in January. So that's well worth checking out. We've always try and bring you a variety of things. We've got a couple of chats with ex-players. I've spoken to someone at Bromley about Callum Fisher, so that's an interesting one as well. So whilst we're on the subject of promoting things, and Sam, you've caught up with Christian Fashnacht.
Yeah, I spoke to him actually before the Derby game, so a little while ago now. But we've got pretty good now at squirreling away content for the international break. And spoke to him about a variety of things, really. Obviously, his injury at the moment, which is the key topic around him, expected back fairly soon. But he talks about sort of some of the struggles he's had with that, why it's important for him to be back quite soon, and why it maybe was quite frustrating to get that injury when Johannes Hoftorup had just come into the door. Also talks about being labelled as sort of a David Wagner player, which I'm sure everyone can understand, having worked with him before and being brought in. Plenty of interesting stuff. Speaks about his contract situation as well. Of course, the club have the option to extend next summer, so he's almost sort of playing for that new deal. So although it feels like he's been somebody who's been in the background the last few weeks with that injury, there are definitely a few sort of interesting topics, and we asked him I asked him about all of them. It's going to be there in video form, plenty in written form as well. So I'd echo Paddy's sentiments on pinkin.com/subscribe. That's the place to go.
Adam, any possible thing to add on top of that in terms of promotion? I tell you what, you should do. You should outline what your YouTube goal is before the end of the month, and where people need to go to help us fulfil that, because they're very kind out there, listeners and watchers.
Yeah, I think the support on the YouTube channel has been top notch, to be honest, for the last year or so. Feels like the growth is there. We're, I think, just over 200 subs away now from 10K. So the goal is by the end of 2024. To have hit the 10K mark. Who knows, we might be able to do a giveaway or a special bit of content around that. So why not go and hit that subscribe button down below if you haven't already. Of course, follow us on every other piece of social media content channels, because we have, as you boys have just pointed out, a lot of content coming your way that I think most Norwich fans, or every Norwich fan, would enjoy.
I'm going to start a campaign, which is when we get to 10K, all of you boys have got to do a 10K. I think that's only fair, isn't it? So there we go. I've signed you up for that.
Running around my house after two children
to run at 10K. There we go. We'll get you. We'll see if you can get you on those those anti-gravity treadmills that they have at Colney. They'd be good to do on. You could do that with an L. I'm sure he'd be up for that. That's a nice place to leave it. We've got for an hour there, as we like to do on a weekly basis for that game. We'll of course be back next week after the Stoke game, the Narcissus Palace derby. That's going to be really interesting to see how Norwich City do there ahead of obviously another bumper week and another 5-game block before yet another international break. So it's going to be a busy few weeks or so. And as I think we've just outlined, Pinken is the best place to follow it all as it unfolds. Gents, thank you very much. Get back to your... We'll have to wrap you back up into cotton wool as we let you out into the real world after this pod. And we'll see you again very soon. Thanks for watching and listening.